Hello, everybody, and welcome to the sixth episode of the second season of Talk Ward. I'm joined by my guests, Neato TV.
How's it going?
And Jay Walker.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, no worries at all. The topic of today's discussion is Apple TV, Apple TV jailbreaks, Apple TV tweaks, just all sort of things in that area. So, Let's get started with the question that I'm pretty sure Neato wants to like scoop his own eyeballs out with a spoon every time he hears. Why should people want to jailbreak an Apple TV?
It's true. I do hear this question a lot. It's the most frequently asked question. I think the Apple TV has some of the most potential out of all the different devices that you can jailbreak. And I think due to the fact that it never had full attention, too loud, that's good enough. due to the fact that it hasn't gotten as much attention as the other devices because there wasn't a way to monetize things, or just maybe just didn't get as much attention in general, like from the media, from Apple, from anybody else. But with this, the two most recent Apple TVs are jailbreakable for life. Now, granted, the 4K going to be a bit more of a challenge, and I can get into that later. But
yeah, I was going to say you're moving off from that, but we're going to start with something light like the appetizer.
We're also going to get into the specifics regarding sandpaper and why they shouldn't go near logic boards.
to add to what Kevin was saying, the Apple TV, it certainly is a platform that's, you know, every bit as powerful as the iPhone in terms of, you know, it has every bit of the, when I say powerful, I mean tweakable. It's every bit as tweakable as the Apple TV. But yeah, there hasn't been a way for people to really monetize that up until we launched the Neato TV App Store, where people can actually sell stuff. And fairly soon, we'll be opening that up to other developers. So hopefully we can get the interest going where we'll see a rich ecosystem of tweaks just like we have for iOS.
Yes. Okay. So yeah. So like you were saying about the store, we didn't have a way to monetize before the store. So sort of talk us through the store, like as if picture me as someone, for example, who's never seen the store, never used the store. How would you describe the store to someone like me?
Do you want me to take this, Justin, or you got it?
Yeah, front end's more your thing. I don't like dealing with people.
I'm a people person.
Yes, you are.
So anyway, the store, it's very basic right now. There's one app that you can buy and control. And the way that you sign up for it like any other website that you make an account. And right now you have to do it through the website, or like, you know, there's no way to do it through the app itself yet, but that is an eventual plan. You sign up for an account, you sign in on the Apple TV as well, and then you get one of those 4-digit passcode things that you see in similar to things like Plex or I don't think Netflix ever used it. They're I think maybe
Adult Swim
used it
at one point.
Yeah.
Adult Swim uses it.
A standard TVOS activation link.
Exactly. So you sign up using that, and then from there, once you actually make a purchase, it goes through Amazon Pay currently. In the future, we are also going to support PayPal and potentially other payment processors. But for right now, you have to have an Amazon account. But as long as you have an Amazon account, you know, and a credit card, a valid credit card on it, and a place to ship to, then you can sign up for it.
So that's quite an interesting move. So what made you decide to go with Amazon Pay over PayPal initially?
The fact that that's the way Justin wrote the server.
Yeah, I'm working on another project where we're tied heavily with Amazon integration, and I already had the code.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, that's a completely valid reason, ease of code sharing. Okay, so onto more sort of hardware-based things. So tell us about your adventure with the sandpaper.
I may throw in words allegedly here and things like that, and kind of
sandal. Innocent.
Yeah, yeah. None of this is confirmed. None of this. This is all speculation.
Absolutely. So with the 4K. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say we need to back up a little before we can get to the sandpaper. And it looks like we had a question in the chat where somebody's asking about how we found out about the hidden lightning connector on the Apple TV 4K. And I think that's where we need to back up to be able to get that. So, hey Anito, how much info about our toy should we divulge?
Probably not a whole lot.
Okay.
Unless we use the word allegedly a lot and use initials to describe, if even that.
Well, so yeah, so we use initials. That'll work. We came across the information that there exists a way for Apple internal employees to flash in the initial firmware onto the devices. So we did a little bit of research, and we may have came across one of these, which we'll refer to. We may have came across one of these just sitting in the road somewhere. We looked at it and we realized that it's got a little bit different shape than a standard Ethernet adapter. Why is that? We wondered. And then it wasn't long before, wasn't it, Steve, who initially discovered the trapdoor?
Yeah, because he looked at the top and he's just like, I wonder what that does.
Yeah, so we, because, you know, it, within the whole, you know, the KJC gig and stuff like that, you know, and it goes much further than just that. It just basically, if you're an OG jailbreaker and there's information around, you get a hold of it somehow, you know, through different channels, whether it's, you know, an IRC room or otherwise. And Steve found out about the picture of this alleged device we found. And it was pretty clear that that's definitely meant to prop something up, and it wasn't long after that he showed us the picture of the pins there.
Yep.
Now, one would think with this device that it would be just as simple as plugging in a lightning adapter into this device, because it does have it allegedly has a receptacle for a lightning adapter. But it wasn't that easy to just plug it in and plug in a lightning cable and get into DFU mode.
No, so, it was not.
Yeah, I'll let you go on for the next part there, Kevin.
So I decide I have an Apple TV 4K. I only have one of them at the time, and it's on 12.4, and I really don't feel like risking anything on it because there's other ways to get into DFU that we weren't really sure if they were going to be receptive to what we were trying to do from there or if the cable was even going to talk to anyone. We had also found out that it was possible to get into recovery mode because that doesn't require the cable through Wi-Fi. Through sending a command through a custom version of libimobile.
So yeah, I thought device into recovery works over Wi-Fi. So
yes. So I was like, the cable should talk to it, but I want to be certain before I risk this 12.4 Apple TV 4K that is already. So I go and buy another device on the hopes that it will have 12.4 on it, and it does not. It has 12.3. So to me, that device is functionally useless.
Yeah, unjailbreakable. We can't get it on a version that is jailbreakable. So what can we do? And so the ideas start
Exactly. So from here, I start getting some suggestions from some cohorts in the Check Frame group that are like, hey, you know, you can try this.
One of the ones who told you to do what you did is...
He might have a proclivity... towards frozen water. He's not a fan of it. So he's just like, well, you just really need to disconnect the actual chip from the board, the NAND from the board, to get it to go into DFU mode, because if it can't communicate with it, you know. I was like, all right, maybe I'll start with that. And I allegedly start trying to do that. with any kind of tools I can find. I thought I had X-Acto knives. I did not. Just kind of chipping away, really, really trying to, and the thing keeps booting just fine. And, you know, allegedly somebody might have been like, well, hey, like, you know, if you take some sandpaper to the NAND, you know, that'll do the same thing. It'll
destroy
just...
the integrity of the data arrays, and yeah.
It turns out you allegedly have to sand quite a bunch of layers away. Like, you remember that commercial when they're like, how many licks does it take to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Roll? And there's a very
takes
nice...
a lot of licks.
So many licks. And eventually it decides, hey, you know what? This is probably not fine. Or no, this probably is fine, and I'm not... I'm in DFU mode. I allegedly take a picture of it being red in this profiler, and I allegedly CC Rick. And that's the picture of the Sandman to bring me a drink.
There's one thing that we... Did you at any point, while rubbing it with sandpaper, did you at any point think this may not be the best course of action?
There might have been somebody there that was trying to tell me, that was pleading for the life of said Apple TV. He's like, no, it never did anything to you. Why would you do just, you know, how do you sleep at night? And I was like, this is happening, you know? I was like,
yeah. Yeah, Kevin, with the resilience of a saint, just marched off.
Indeed, indeed.
True American hero.
I'd like to, you know, I don't use that word, but if anybody else wants to say it, I'm not going to deny it.
If this Apple TV actually exists in the real world, it's almost certainly in a special closet in Cupertino.
Yes, it's quite possible.
If any of the alleged actions happened, then yes, this would be
a... These are all loosely based on a potentially allegedly true story.
Yeah, a friend of a cousin of a friend of...
Yes. Some events may have been embellished.
Of an uncle, of a nephew.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yes, the device did eventually end up in DFU mode. And, it did. And at that point, it definitely did not have much to hang on to because power was just leaking out of the device. So it turned on for a few seconds, then a few less seconds, and then eventually not at all. But we were able to confirm that the Apple TV, because at this point we weren't even sure if the 4K even had true DFU. We didn't know if it was...
You didn't know because of the hardware access, right?
Yeah. How could we? You know, like, yeah it's the same stuff. Presumably Apple's going to do the same thing, but we have no way of knowing. So that was part of it, is just to get the little bit of information that, yes, indeed, the 4K does have the exact same boot ROM as...
And it does have DFU mode, and that alleged, you know, cable allegedly lets you...
Allegedly connect to said DFU mode.
Yes, and to allegedly exploit it.
Yes. It's a simple question, really. It's who would win, millions in research and development or one American guy with a piece of sandpaper?
Well, we have a hypothetical scenario which seems to prove that it's the man with sandpaper. But you know, if this ever gets tested in the real world, just let us know.
We need to pass Tech Rex this idea of just get him to like sand the NAND on an iPhone until it fails to boot.
Yeah, you know, and he can confirm this alleged story that we heard.
Mm. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's the Sandland saga over. Onto more interesting things. So as of right now, for what I imagine are fairly obvious reasons, CheckRain doesn't support Apple TV.
Less obvious reasons. It's largely because of the reliance that the Apple TV Jailbreak ecosystem has on Substrate, I think, is the last remaining problem that we're dealing with for CheckRain to support Apple TV. It doesn't have the 4K support, obviously, because of the lack of connectors. You know, mm-hmm. But we do have plans to manufacture and present open source CAD designs so people can 3D print their own injectors for the Apple TV 4K in the future.
Oh, that's great. And
there's a possibility that there might be mod chips involved as well, because getting into DFU is quite...
Yeah, we've yet to confirm a proper way. So to further on in the Sandman's story, we did find a way to, because we did get another Apple TV 4K, which was jailbreakable this time. And we were able to, this time around, corrupt the LLB in a way which... We literally only changed 2 bytes. We changed where the identifier, where it says iBoot version, whatever. We just changed that to say iBroke. And whenever we boot that up now, that Apple TV is permanently in DFU mode because it has a permanently bad LLB on it. Mm-hmm. So, but we are able to now get that 4K to boot up with CheckRain, exploit, and everything else. We just don't have a proper way to...
Actually, not all the way to
the end. We can get the payload running anyway.
So what we
not with that one. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, so what we can confirm to everyone is it's possible to get 2DFU on the 4K, but only once.
Yes. Well, and Steve also has found the Force DFU pin, so that's where, you know, a little bit of mod shipping may come into play, where we have to actually have people solder something onto the pin there so that you can press your Force DFU pin. We're hoping we find another way, a proper sequence. It may be an IR sequence that we don't even know yet, so we may have to brute force IR signal.
That is a good point someone's just made in chat. The good thing about Check Rain on the Apple TV is you hardly ever need to reboot an Apple TV. So it's basically, well, it's near as makes no difference, a permanent jailbreak.
That's always been the good thing, because Jailbreak D even ate battery life for a long time and never was an issue on Apple.
Don't care on the Apple TV, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
So a few different points. For the only flaw of having it be something requiring USB is if you have you don't have a laptop and you need to jailbreak your TV in your living room or something like that. Mm-hmm. That presents a problem. Now, I'm sure people are eventually going to when we have a Linux version, get clever with Arduinos and stuff like that and find other workarounds, or maybe even find a way to do it from your...
To that end, whenever we release Linux, I don't know if you were in there for that conversation, Kevin, but Check Rain will be releasing an ARM 7 and ARM 64 version for Linux, so that you can run it on your Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
I have a Raspberry Pi sitting around. That's good news.
So yeah, you can keep your Raspberry Pi next to your Apple TV, permanently be able to boot.
Oh, and it is a 2080p TV as well, so that's great.
Exactly.
So, what do you... So obviously Check Rain is a huge part of it, but what do you see as sort of the future for Apple TV jailbreaks? Do you think it's just going to be Check Rain all the way from now on?
Well, I mean... Honestly, it doesn't really need to be updated too much, except unless we have to do like any kind of different kernel patches or anything else like that. But yeah, Check Rain should cover it until we have a new model Apple TV, because I believe there was supposed to be a new one.
A12-based one, right?
Yeah. So things could change for that whenever that happens, you know.
But honestly, to what end? What is Apple going to do? And why? What is going to be like the promotional thing for buying an A12 one? Is it going to be an 8K Apple TV? Like, that has no reason.
Right. So are there some tweaks on iOS that would be cool for tvOS? Snowboard came to TV recently, right? Or has that been a while?
Yeah.
No, it was fairly recently. It was within the last month or so.
Yep.
So Snowboard is one, a very obvious answer. People have been asking for theming for a long time, and Spark came in and just, you know, started crushing it right away. Released that. He updated Crash Reporter, which has made life easier when it comes to symbolic getting crash logs and sending them back. I'm trying to think of what else go ahead.
And I think what's more interesting is not tweaks that already exist on iOS and should be ported to Apple TV, but rather the tweaks that don't exist on iOS because it wouldn't make any sense, and subsequently it makes sense to have on the Apple TV. For example, a picture-in-picture tweak. Like, that had some value on iOS when they're like a YouTube picture-in-picture tweak, but with Apple TV, it'd be nice to be able to quite literally have a quarter or eighth size frame where we just have a tweak that adds a UI application window where it's just a full other app running inside of another app. One of the tweaks, back whenever I smoked tobacco, I'd go outside on my balcony and I would smoke out there, and I could still see the TV inside. And there's a way you can get, I forget what it's called, I think it's Air Speaker for iOS. It's a tweak that you can install on there. And now your iPhone can become a remote speaker for your AirPlay. So I would often AirPlay my device so I could listen to the TV and still see it from outside without having to keep the door open, especially in winter. But if my wife's in there watching it, she can't hear, only I can hear. So that would be a nice tweak to have the audio subsystem where we can fork the streams, where it can go to an AirPlay speaker as well as continue playing on that. And then for picture-in-picture, have it where maybe the small picture goes to the headset and you give the headphones to the kids so they can watch their thing, and then you watch whatever your program is on the main screen. There's tons of options that you would not, you know, you'd never want to do something like that on iOS, but with Apple TV, it makes perfect sense.
Big shout out to Karen/AngelWin for that one. That is an amazing tweak. It has saved my behind so many times.
Yeah, Karen did make that. I forgot about that. Yep.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you run Linux like I do, or if you have, you know, like a Raspberry Pi and you set up an audio system, you can have AirPlay servers running on inside your Pulse audio subsystem so that you can now AirPlay to that as well as AirPlay to another device. Another thing that we thought about was airplane from one Apple TV to another. Screen sharing. So is one of, and I don't know why Apple didn't do this, because Apple, I mean, think about it this way. Let's say you just graduated from orthodontist school or whatever. You're opening up a dentist office and you're going to have 8 TVs in your waiting room. What are you going to do? Run HDMI cable to connect all the TVs so they keep playing the same loop or whatever, you know, about, you know, importance of, you know, dental hygiene, or buy, you know, 8 Apple TVs and have one be the master and have it AirPlay its, you know, screen share to every other Apple TV.
Here's an idea for you. I want to see what you guys think of this. So you know how like CarPlay has that tweak to like allow apps that don't actually support CarPlay on there?
Yeah,
I did not know about that, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so what do you think of, like, I don't know, like a tweak to let you download iPhone apps and run iPhone apps on the TV?
We've talked about that. So what's funny is you can quite literally just inject an iOS app into a standard and into an Apple TV app, mm-hmm. and it will, you'll have access to all of its runtime. You know, you can inject it just like you would inject a tweak. So you could make a wrapper for just about any iOS app where you're just rebuilding some of the UI. You still call all the main functions that exist within that, inside that program, and now you've quickly ported a iOS app to Apple TV.
They're both ARM64. You know, there's a few things that you can do on iOS that you can't do on Apple TV. There's a few classes that are different here and there, but for the most part, like, it should just run out of the box. Just create.
Yeah, if it's something like Amazon Prime before that existed, that was something we were considering. Just get in there, figure out where it grabs its video element, just put it onto a wrapper that displays the video for the Apple TV, and we just call the function to get the video. You know, it'd be like Amazon Get Video or Stream or something like that, and it returns a whatever the foundation is, you know, a video player. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, should be relatively easy to port those kind of apps. It's just that, you know, well, and actually now I think there's less of a reason because a lot of these apps are getting ported to Apple TV. When we were originally talking about it, there weren't as many Apple TV apps. You know, there wasn't as much parity between the platforms and even in the real app store.
And then even when Amazon Prime did come out, it was iOS 11 only. So I still had to take the lower install from Julio Verne, and I didn't necessarily port it. It kind of worked out of the box. I just had to tweak it to do additional things to kind of short circuit some of the reasons that it was crashing for Amazon Prime and Netflix. That nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kevin, as a side note, I haven't been crediting people from their questions, so let me just fix that real quick.
The question from Ultra is a good one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so the question about tweaks that would be from iOS that would work on tvOS, that was from W. Braffman, and we kind of answered Nathaniel Hoffer's question in that one too. We answered Alex K's question earlier about the hidden lightning connector in the Apple TV 4K. So next question is from Ethan. Is tvOS mostly the same as iOS because the version numbers are usually the same? I believe they're quite similar. You two can probably explain this better than I can.
Yeah, I can elaborate further on this. So there's the difference between iOS and tvOS. For iOS, there's more sensors and different things to deal with that don't exist on the TV because they don't need to. So there's some things that are just completely left out because they're unnecessary or they're there. But when it comes to stuff like UIKit, mostly similar. There's not too much different. You know, there's different actions that you need to select when you want to, if you're adding a target to a button, there's different things you need to use, like to trigger it instead of the normal touch up and side, because you're not touching anything on the screen. You're using, you know, the button, you know, the button on the remote. Mm-hmm. And then there's the focus engine, which is non-existent on the other devices because you're not moving things around the screen saying, this is the button I want to press, move it from here to here to here. So there's that different paradigm. So you have those differences. And then the other core differences are, instead of springboard, you have a combination of headboard and pineboard taking place.
And don't forget the 13 thing. Isn't there an extra thing in there? Pineboard services, service or something like that.
So pineboard services is the same from before. A new one is running board D.
Running board, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of boards. You have pineboard, springboard, running board, headboard, backboard D. Yeah, there's a lot of boards. Board all the board. Now, those parts are the same. Backboard D, both are kind of a control center on both to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So if you take down Backboard D, it kills other things.
The control center on 13 is super, super nice. It kind of
well, it's pretty cool.
And that's something that we also want to tweak with. We've got to give Apple some credit. We both kind of hate on Apple, especially in recent years, in terms of their lack of vision. But whoever the guy is at Apple who decided Control Center needs to have the Apple TV remote built into there, that guy deserves all the props because we should have thought of that back in, TVOS 9. We should have absolutely thought of that.
But agreed.
For some reason we didn't. And that just points out the lack of attention the TVOS has had. There's something that was so obvious, nobody ever implemented, including us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obvious, so awesome. And on top of that, that is something that Justin pointed out to me. He's like, we should tweak that. We should make that cooler. Have it be able to choose different applications to open. Have it be able to choose different things like sleep and wake and like whatever else.
I would love if it had like some app icons at the bottom that you could tap to quick switch apps on. That would be amazing. Yep.
And that goes into one of the things that we were talking about. Yeah, tell them about the our built-in class idea that we were talking about and the communication between the app and TVOS.
Oh, right. Actually, you know what? It was actually more your idea than mine, so I think you can explain it better than me.
Fair enough. So what we'd like to see is I use Plex a lot. I have a Plex server that I run in my house so I can watch my programs without Hulu or Netflix knowing that I'm watching stuff and what time I'm home. So what I would like to be able to do is I would like for my iPhone to be able to know what app I'm in and give me certain options that are unique to that app. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm in Plex, it'd be nice to see at the bottom where I could quick switch to Hulu or Netflix or some other app. But it would also be nice to be able to like quick switch to a different show that I want to watch without, it has maybe my top five shows. And that would be, a very Plex specific thing. Mm-hmm. But that obviously comes with a lot of overhead. We have to build the stuff where it can talk between the TVOS and the iPhone. So we have to build a service there. And then we also have to build in a tweak for each individual app. Mm-hmm. So Kevin was working on, the AirPlay thing you were working on where you originally did the, you could use the URL schema to do AirDrop?
That's AirDrop.
Yeah. So he set it up in a way where right now, if you were developing an App Store app for Apple TV, you can make use of AirDrop, and it will only work if you're on a jailbroken Apple TV.
Damn.
So official App Store developers can add in features that are specific to jailbreak people and wouldn't be benign otherwise. So we thought about taking this a step further and making it such where the Plex developers could add in a special class. This class would have a specific name. And if our system detects that the iOS application has this class, it will then load it and then display whatever contents the Plex developers have chosen to, put in the display inside of the remote app. Mm-hmm. So now we don't have to develop tweaks for every individual app that we want to add in some Control Center Apple TV remote functionality. The actual developers, they have the option to do it, and it's completely benign.
So Apple wouldn't even blink an eye. They wouldn't see an issue with it.
They would have to actually add stuff to their static scanning that isn't even looking for things that are technically illegal under the. So, they'd have to go above and beyond to target these apps.
They're not technically breaking any rules.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They're just adding in a class that just never gets instantiated by that app. Yeah, the only way they could audit such a thing is if they filtered based off of, like, they would have to make a rule where your application can never use a class with this name, which would be so ridiculous. People would kick up so much of a fuss.
And also, they'd probably get some false positives.
Yeah, not even that. You could just switch the class name, and that would be that. Like,
yeah, that would be a cat and mouse game. And like,
we would also choose such basic. We would choose such basic class names that they would have to shoot themselves in the foot to.
Perfect. Yeah, cut off their nose despite their face, as you said earlier.
Exactly.
So that's kind of our plans for tweaking some of the stuff that Apple has done to improve the ecosystem.
And to further that just a tiny bit, since I've been playing with AirDrop and adding more functionality to that, like airdropping videos, whatever, I want you to be able to airdrop anything to your device from any other device that supports it. But to further that, you have continuity on other devices, and that's not on Apple TV. And if you don't know what continuity is, if people just don't know it by the name, it's like, oh, you're viewing something on your phone and you're within proximity to your computer.
It's what
and they're paired
off, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you get that website saying, hey, this is a URL, blah, blah, blah. You know,
the little
I would love to have that to work between the Apple TV as well. Not just with websites. You're watching a video. You want it to start playing on here in the app that, you know, that plays it in there. Boom. Hand it.
You know what I would love? Because the HomePod has this now, but no other device does, is Apple Music handoff.
Yeah, same kind of thing. We could do that too.
Yeah, that would be great. We kind of sort of got off topic with the
question. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's just the tvOS and iOS version number thing. So yeah, they're fairly similar. They're forks of like the same base, I think I'm right in saying, right?
Well, and the yeah. kernels are similar too, and the boot ROMs are the exact same depending on the chip. So it's just like they're, you know, the hardware wise, there's a lot of hardware and like low-level
software. And it's clear to us that it was a separate development team early on, and as time has gone on, they've been moving closer and closer together. So, yeah, the versions are more or less aligned now. There for a while, what was it, like four versions numbers they were off?
Something like that. And on top of that, they would like have this external public version and then another private version that were more closely synced with the iOS ones. They've had very bizarre numbering patterns and schemes throughout tvOS. Actually, not even tvOS history, Apple TV history, because it wasn't always called.
Yeah, because technically, I believe the third gen runs some weird, bizarre version of iOS 8 now, right?
Yeah, same with the second gen.
Yeah. Because I remember this, because they released the, I think it was like a security update a few months back, and it popped up on everyone's releases as an iOS 8 release, and everyone was just like really confused, because no iOS device ended its life on iOS 8.
Except that one.
Yeah, well, except the Apple TV. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fun.
Question from Ultra. How did you guys get into jailbreak development? For someone wanting to get started in jailbreak development / OS security, what is the best place to start? And what are some good resources?
When the first Apple TV came out and I saw people hacking it, and I first off, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself, it would really bug me that I needed iTunes open when I wanted to play a video on my TV. And somebody else might go use that computer, quit iTunes. Oh, I can't watch this video. I was like, there's so many things that are just maddening about this device, but it has so much potential. And then I saw people hacking it, the Opera TV community on IRC on MoveSpeak Network, way back. Joined in there and just started chatting with people. And yeah, everything, the rest is history from there. Like that is the room that started it all for me.
Today I learned that Awkward TV predates you as a developer.
Say it again.
So today I learned that Awkward TV predates you as a jailbreak developer.
Yeah.
I always thought that was just like your thing.
No. Awkward TV, that came a little bit before me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and so Jim Dovey, he went by Alan Quartermain at the time, he actually works on the Apple Watch team now, or he did for a couple years. Was one of my mentors in that community. It was a great community. I was.
Wait, who's asking? Oh.
Cool star.
I didn't realize there was another questions channel. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, that's where the questions get posted.
I didn't actually finish the rest of that about how I got into jailbreak development or talking about the store.
You haven't even joined Chronic Dev in your story there yet.
No, I haven't. So I'll jump over to that part of it, actually. So when the second Apple TV came out, all the people from Chronic Dev joined the Awkward TV room because that's where they knew people were congregating, doing all this hacking for the Apple TV. So like, these people know about the Apple TV. We should all join forces. They came in, Dustin, Posix Ninja, West Bear, like everybody from Chronic Dev just jumped in that room. And we all started hacking away. The first Apple TV 2 plugin was actually run on an iPhone before an Apple TV because we didn't have a jailbreak working for it yet. Mm-hmm. those are the some of the kind of crazy things we had to resort to. Dustin Howitt figured out how to do that little gem. Not going to go into too much detail about that. Let's see here. Justin, do you think there's anything else worth mentioning around that period? I don't want to like dwell on it too long.
Yeah, no, because I mean, this is really, they're trying to figure out how, because it sounds like somebody who wants to get into this, so they're trying to,
I know
the guy, I know what he's working on, so yeah, this will likely be a huge help for him. From L020, Nito, is your upcoming workshop going to be in person or online? This gives you the perfect opportunity to plug it.
Perfect, okay. Awesome. It is going to be online. There's no plans currently for anything that's in person or that I do like actually at like a classroom setting. I haven't decided all of the actual parameters yet. I do know that what I'm thinking, what I've been kicking around is I would have a video, a set of videos that I put together, and then I would play one of them at the beginning of the week. And then throughout the week, people would have time to come in and at different times. I mean, I'll have set intervals of time. It won't be all day every day, where you can come in and ask questions, share your work, do whatever that needs to be done for each video of the week. And then I would have a couple weeks for that, and it's completely free. You don't have to know anything beforehand. If you do, it's helpful, but if you don't, no big deal. It's only Objective-C and C-based languages that I'll be teaching. You're free to write in what you want, just know that I won't be as able to be as helpful to you in trying to give you the materials that you're trying to learn. The whole spiel of the class is from start to finish, I want to teach you how to research, actually do like the research, the work involved to create a tweak, start to finish, application for tvOS. This stuff will be applicable to iOS as well. And I'm actually going to try and have some guest speakers on as well to try and share material, share their insights, things of that nature.
I do think I'll probably get involved because it feels like I've been hitting my head against a brick wall trying to learn Objective-C.
Please do.
Right. Next question, again from Ethan. Is there an Apple TV emulator? I believe would be more sort of along Corellium sort of lines, wouldn't it?
It doesn't exist in Corellium or however you say their product name, but yes, I do have a working QEMU setup that's running a little bit of Apple TV's system.
Nice.
So the thing was released publicly for, you know, the instructions were released publicly. I forget what the group was that released that, but it was for iOS, and I just used tvOS RAM disks instead. And yeah, I can SSH in and do stuff, but it's not a full fledged.
Yep, he answered that perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So this is gonna be the last question. I'm gonna call it here. Okay. Do you think it would be possible to run macOS on these Apple TVs like possible in the first gen? Was the first gen Apple TV not?
It was a macOS system. Yeah.
It had an Intel processor. No. It was running a mashed up version of 10.4.7 and 10.5.
Yikes.
So yeah, I know. It was not fun to work with.
I can imagine it wasn't very secure.
It wasn't what?
Very secure.
No, it was not.
That was not one of their priorities at that time. But
what was awesome about this device, though, aside from the hackability and it having like a real USB port and all these other things, I had it set up where my recovery partition was hacked. So anytime I restored the thing, it restored to like a hacked jailbroken.
Nice.
Yeah. Didn't the restore partition, when you restored it, actively patched the system as you were restoring?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember. I never actually had one. There was one in my office that I was working at it at the time that was jailbroken, and I remember that being the case.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome.
Okay, I think we'll call that there. Thank you very much, Nito and Jay Walker, for joining us. I've been your host, Aaron. Just to get my plugs out of the way, do follow us on Twitter at Talkboard Live, and we now have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/talkboard. You don't have to join the Patreon. You never have to join the Patreon to be able to listen to the show, either on your podcast service or live, but there are some fun perks on there that I think you guys might enjoy. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you again next week. Goodbye.